This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, January 3rd of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll feature the work of a couple of CU Boulder students who looked at the effects of extreme weather on homeless populations in Denver and in Boulder as part of a class project. And Rocky Mountain Community Radio looks back at a freak accident in Arches National Park that killed Uganda's ambassador for women and girls, who was also then a visitor at the Watson Institute here in Boulder. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. Then it's How on Earth, the KGNU Science Show. At 9 a.m. comes another archival recording of British philosopher Alan Watts. Then at 9:30, James Wise will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, but first it's time for the headlines with KGNU's John Kellen.
A new shopping bag law is now in effect in Colorado. Under the new law, which began with the new year, each disposable plastic or paper bag will cost shoppers 10 cents at checkout. That per-bag charge may be even more in areas where local laws impose higher fees. People who are in federal or state food assistance programs are exempt from the new law, but may have to prove they're enrolled in an eligible program. Businesses that don't comply with the new state law are subject to fines. A similar disposable bag law has been in effect in Boulder since 2013. The main branch of the Boulder Public Library will reopen in phases beginning this week, KGNU's Steve Miller reports.
A limited reopening begins tomorrow. Library patrons can pick up hold items from 9 a.m. until 7 p.m. Library officials said they hope for a full reopening of the main branch next Monday, January 9th. The main branch has been closed since December 20th, after air duct testing showed levels of methamphetamine contamination well above allowed thresholds. No other library branches were affected. Remediation of the problem began right away, and Library Director David Farnan says he is confident there is no ongoing health risk. According to a press release, a contractor's report confirmed that the highest contamination levels were in public library restrooms. There had been several reports of people smoking meth in those restrooms. There was also surface contamination in heavily used seating areas. No public restrooms will be available until the remediation is complete and affected furniture is removed. For KGNU, I'm Steve Miller.
Starting today, Broomfield residents can apply for openings on the city's boards and commissions. There are 21 open positions in 2023. For most of them, applicants must be over 18. Openings include one for an alternate member of the Advisory Committee on Environmental Sustainability and five for the Board of Health. Applications will be open until the end of this month. Also in Broomfield, the deadline for applications to fill the seat of Ward 2 Councilmember William Lindstedt is approaching. Applications are due by January 6th at 5 p.m. Applicants must live in Broomfield's Ward 2. Lindstedt resigned from City Council after winning a seat to the State House in November. Denver Mayor Michael Hancock is asking the Catholic Church to help shelter immigrants arriving in the city from Central and South America. KGNU's Philip Armour has more.
Denver Mayor Michael Hancock has made an official request to Denver's Archbishop Samuel Aquila to help shelter migrants and asylum seekers at the now-vacant Little Sisters of the Poor on West 29th Avenue. Hundreds of individuals from Venezuela and other Central and South American countries continue to arrive in Denver, with about 1,500 people a night staying in various temporary facilities. The city has allocated three recreation centers to be temporary housing facilities and has paid for hotel rooms. City officials have spent more than $1.1 million so far to house, shelter, and care for more than 3,000 migrants who have arrived in Denver since December 9th. The city has put out an urgent call for short-term, preferably bilingual, shelter workers to assist in the shelters through March 31st. There was no comment from the Archdiocese as of Sunday. For KGNU, I'm Philip Armour.
The minimum wage in the city and county of Denver is now $17.29 an hour, up from $15.87 an hour. That's a 9% increase, and it went into effect on New Year's Day. Minimum wage increases in Denver are set by the Department of Finance and based on the Consumer Price Index. Even working 40 hours a week for 52 weeks a year, $17.29 an hour still leaves workers at less than 40% of the area's median income. The state minimum wage also rose on January 1st, up to $13.65 an hour. Inflation is hitting lower-income people harder than it does others in Colorado, according to a study by two CU Denver professors. Their report comes as state economic forecasters predict that inflation will continue to rise. The professors say the unequal impact of rising costs calls for a targeted approach to dealing with inflation that recognizes the unequal financial burden it creates. A side country ski outing on Peak 10 above Breckenridge had a tragic ending for two men Saturday. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KDNK's Morgan Neely has more.
A man and his adult son exited Breckenridge Ski Resort through a backcountry access gate at about 1 in the afternoon on New Year's Eve. They entered a popular area known as the Numbers to ski south to southeast facing terrain that sits at around 11,600 feet. Details are scarce as to exactly how it happened, but both men were caught in a slide shortly thereafter. The older of the two men was partially buried. After digging himself out, he was unable to locate his son. After making his way to a spot where he found cell service, the man called 911. Multiple agencies responded, and within about an hour and a half, an AVI rescue dog found the younger man's body fully buried. The Colorado Avalanche Information Center sent a team to investigate the slide on Sunday. Their full report won't be available until later this week. For KDNK News, I'm Morgan Neely.
Today's weather outlook: expect partly sunny skies with high temperatures near 32 degrees, mostly cloudy tonight with low temperatures around 23. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. During the fall semester, the KGNU newsroom teamed up with CU Boulder's Critical Thinking in Environmental Studies course as part of a years-long partnership to produce a series known as The Brink. Two student projects looked at the effects of extreme weather on unhoused populations in Denver and in Boulder. Today, we'll hear both of those stories, which I've edited for brevity. Exposure to extreme cold reportedly caused 4 deaths among unhoused people during last month's winter storm in the Front Range. CU Boulder student Jason Trazer spoke with service providers in Denver about how severe weather is fueling unprecedented demand for services.
Rising heat and extreme cold weather conditions pose multiple risks to those without proper shelter or resources. As the housing crisis and cost of living, stresses of the pandemic, and ever-increasing problems being faced by citizens in Denver continue, some organizations are finding ways to assist these populations, like the Denver Rescue Mission, represented by Public Relations Manager Stephen Hinkle.
What we're currently experiencing in Denver and in the Front Range is certainly unprecedented than we've ever seen before. So we served over 1 million meals in our last fiscal year. So people are definitely using our services at a higher rate than they ever have before. Denver gets cold overnight in the winter months, and it gets down to 0 and 10 and 15 degrees frequently. And that, obviously, that could kill you. Like, people get frostbite, you know, and other problems that cold weather does affect you. And we make it a point to anybody who wants a bed during those emergency weather situations that they will get a bed.
The same goes for summer months. As temperatures rise during the summer, unhoused populations are susceptible to heat stroke, heat exhaustion, dehydration, and more. Alongside housing and food crises, these unhoused populations also lack access to healthcare and proper preparedness for potential extreme weather. Kathy Alderman, the Chief Communications and Public Policy Officer for the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless, is looking to fill those voids.
So the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless is a housing and healthcare provider. So we have a federally qualified health center or community health center in the downtown Denver area. And we have a street outreach team and a street medicine team that go out and meet people where they're living on the streets, To provide them with survival gear as well as healthcare on the streets. It's obviously really important to try to get people inside if that is appropriate and safe for them. We encourage people to utilize the shelters that are available, and sometimes the city will open up some additional shelter spaces and rec centers, if we know that a storm is going to be very bad. If people are unable or unwilling to go to shelters, then we just want to make sure that they stay warm and dry.
In order to provide assistance to those who are unable or unwilling to go to shelters, the coalition helps these individuals acquire tents and tarps, sleeping bags, water-resistant clothing, and whatever else they may need to survive the storm. A focus on healthcare and preparedness is a main goal.
You know, in preparation for storms, our outreach teams will really kind of do a couple of extra passes through the city to make sure that folks know where shelter is if they change their mind, make sure that folks are well prepared, and that they start to understand and recognize the signs of frostbite or other impacts from cold weather, like if their breathing changes. We just want to let them know, you know, where the Stout Street Health Center is, make sure they have a way to contact emergency services if that becomes something they need to do.
For KGNU and CU Boulder, I'm Jason Trazer.
Homeless people in Boulder experience many of the same challenges as those in Denver, but within a context of fewer services and more rigid laws. Boulder closed its daytime shelter several years ago, leaving the unhoused with few options for protection from extreme weather. Many have turned to the downtown branch of the public library, but that wasn't an option during the recent winter storm. The downtown library closed shortly before the storm to undergo environmental testing and cleanup due to illicit drug residue found in bathrooms and air ducts. Those who have to spend most of their day outside in Boulder also risk running afoul of the city's ban on the use of tents and blankets outside. CU Boulder student Archie Annis has more.
The ever-growing population of unhoused individuals in Boulder must find ways to protect themselves from the elements and carry on with their daily lives without violating the city's strict public sheltering laws. While the text of these laws claims their purpose is to cut down on, quote, pollution, crowding, and visual blight, they do so by criminalizing a number of different activities in public spaces. Katie Randall, the development officer at the Boulder Shelter for the Homeless, says these laws have adversely impacted some of our community's most vulnerable members.
I know that bans have been introduced for a number of reasons, but really, criminalizing homelessness is, in reality, what they do. And criminalizing homelessness only makes it more challenging and more difficult for people experiencing homelessness. It pushes them further out of reach, further away from resources and services. And we really just want to connect those people with resources and services to make any and all episodes of homelessness rare and brief.
Boulder Municipal Codes 5610 and 8321 both go by many different names. If you've ever heard someone refer to the tent ban, the blanket ban, cover ban, or camping ban, they were referencing one or both of these bills. Boulder Revised Code 5610 reads, quote, "No person shall reside or dwell temporarily in a place with shelter and conduct activities of daily living, such as eating or sleeping in such a place." And Boulder Revised Code 8321 states that, quote, "No person shall erect or use any tent, net, or other temporary structure for the purpose of shelter or storage of property." Jennifer Levovich is the founder of the local organization Feet Forward. Feet Forward's mission statement says that the organization seeks to empower unhoused individuals in Boulder County by removing barriers to services and meeting basic needs such as food, clothing, and sustained peer-led advocacy and navigation. Jennifer Levovich has experienced being unhoused in Boulder, as she lived unhoused in the area for 4.5 years.
The criminalization of people experiencing homelessness related to the blanket ban, it definitely impacts the morale of people experiencing homelessness. It is not an uncommon occurrence that I hear from someone who is sleeping in public spaces that the encampment team came and threw all their things away, including their IDs. And this is absolutely detrimental to the housing system, because a person has to have their ID, their birth certificate, and their social security card to be considered document ready to even move into an apartment. So when one of those pieces is gone, it's a literal nightmare to have to start all over again.
When asked about what the citizens of Boulder can do to help their fellow community members who are experiencing homelessness, Boulder Shelter for the Homeless's development officer, Katie Randall, said,
"Just get involved." So there are plenty of ways to get involved. You can support the shelter and other homeless service providers through donations and volunteering. Additionally, ask your elected representatives and city council members what they're doing to end homelessness in Boulder. Tackling homelessness one person at a time is a lot easier when we have systems and institutions in place to support individuals rather than allowing them to slip through the cracks. And also, just do a little homework, study up, and see what other cities are doing and how their programs and initiatives are addressing the homeless and unhoused population in those areas.
With housing prices and the cost of living in Boulder increasing, homelessness is going to continue to be an issue for those who struggle to live here. As winter sets in, without legal changes, the ban on public sheltering, resting, and eating will continue to impact those who are most vulnerable first and hardest. For KGNU's The Brink Series, this is Archie Annis.
In 2020, a horrible accident occurred in Arches National Park in Utah. One woman was left dead, a husband and family left grieving. And at the heart of a trial related to that incident, it's not so much about that death, but about the life that was lost. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, Justin Higginbottom of KZMU reports on that life.
Moab was windy on June 13th in 2020. A lot of small but ill-fated circumstances would lead to Esther Nakajigo's death, but first there was the wind. Her friends and family called her Essie, and she was newly married. She and her husband were both new to the country. Essie was from Uganda. She had come to Boulder, Colorado to attend the Watson Institute. Her husband, Ludovic Michaud, is from France. He's a software engineer and was working in Denver when he matched with Essie on a dating app.
You know, immediately attracted to, a sense of humor, a brilliance. She was super smart, and I understood that very quickly. I immediately loved her right away, yeah.
They explored the West together, camping and hiking, although at first, Essie needed some convincing.
She was like, "Why are you guys sleeping on the ground? Like, normally it's for poor people in Uganda would sleep on the ground, but why would you play at sleeping on the ground camping?" And then she tried it, and I was like, "Oh, that's so much fun." And
after they married, Essie became obsessed with having twins. Michaud didn't know why, but soon he wanted them too. That summer, they were closing on a condo where they could raise their future children.
You know, we were building, you know, something together, brick by brick.
Their courtship was during COVID. The national parks were closed for a time during the pandemic, their gates locked. But when Arches reopened, like record numbers in the country, Essie and Michaud hit the road to visit. And a ranger opened those big metal traffic gates for people like them. But this one gate near the visitor center had two swinging sides, and there was only one padlock. So the ranger chose a side to secure to a post. The other was left to swing in the wind.
She was so excited. We were counting it was planned a few weeks before, and we were just counting the days and the weeks until we would do that trip. And she was so excited to see, you know, the national parks in around Moab.
After hiking in Arches, Essie and Michaud were driving that road in front of the visitor center when all these small occurrences collided. The wind, that particular side of the gate being unlocked, the fact that it opened against traffic, which it shouldn't have done. A gust blew the gate open just as their car passed. The metal bar smashed through the passenger side where Essie was sitting. It's brutal, but there's few other ways to say it. The gate decapitated her. It happened on the one-year anniversary of the couple meeting. Essie was 25. The federal government admitted fault, and last week a wrongful death trial began to determine how much the state will pay Essie's family. Her lawyers are asking for $140 million. It's not your average wrongful death case, because Essie wasn't your average woman.
Welcome to Africa's best high school reality TV show, The Saving Innocence Challenge.
Among a lot of things, she was a reality TV star in Uganda. Not like the Kardashians, kind of the opposite. her show Saving Innocence was about urban Ugandan youths visiting poor rural high schools. It documented what those two classes could learn from each other. When she was 17, she used her college tuition money to create a community health center. She was named Uganda's ambassador for women and girls, and she went to Brussels as one of only 16 to participate in the 2018 European Development Days.
Young leaders here, like Esther, will decide the future. This is Africa, and these are Europe's partners in Africa.
And the European Union is here today, and it's a strong pillar for us, the youth of Uganda, you know, to let us flourish and blossom.
That Watson Institute program she was in Colorado for is an accelerator for leaders around the world. She raised millions for at-risk women in Uganda. She won more awards than I'll list. At the trial, even her husband was taken aback by all her accomplishments in her short life.
Yeah, very surprised of how impressive everything was. I already knew, but I didn't imagine it was like this incredible.
Essie grew up in the slums of Kampala in Uganda. Her mother, Christine Namagambe, says it was that experience that made her daughter focus on fighting for the disenfranchised. That's her mother, who flew to Utah with Essie's brother for the trial. She explains that Essie saw a lot of inequality in Uganda as a child. Her father was abusive, and her mother gave birth to Essie when she was only 16. When Essie was invited to the U.S., her mother was beyond proud. Essie told her not to worry, that she's come this far, and from now on, everything will be fine. Essie's brother, John Sekindu, remembers his sister as someone who defended others, even as a child. Like the time he was in trouble at school and threatened with lashes.
So Essie came out of the blue, like, if any punishment is to be given to him, I would take it for him. And the punishment was 5 strokes of a cane. Like, she took it and I went home without any cane.
Essie was paying for her brother's university tuition. He hoped to join her in her work after graduation.
I was looking forward to becoming great with her, like, as a person.
Since her death, Sekindu has had to drop out. Essie also supported her mother, and she would pour a lot of the money she made from her TV show back into her charities. But in a twist of Utah law, Essie's giving could discount her family's wrongful death claim. The judge will be awarding money based off of their grief and loss, but also her expected income, what she would have earned in her life. The government is arguing that it isn't as much as her lawyers claim because she would have given much of it away.
It's a little disconcerting to hear the government make that argument that the judge should somehow discount her because the money she went out and earned, she might give to do good, and therefore her earning capacity should be discounted in terms of what she would contribute to the family.
That's Zoe Littlepage, a lawyer for the family.
Every day in Uganda, this trial was on the news, and the whole country of Uganda is watching America to see if America will value they called her the Princess of Kampala, America will value her, their princess.
Little Page says that Essie's family expects justice in the U.S. They look up to this country as somewhere where that's possible.
You know, and they're really putting their faith in the American justice system that she won't get discounted because she's African, or she won't get discounted because she's young, but that American justice will value her the way they do.
No matter what the judge decides as an appropriate value for Essie's life, her husband will still be struggling.
I'm committed to getting better, but it's a full-time job, I would say. You know, I had PTSD, so which means for the first weeks or months, I had like 100 of flashbacks in loop. Like, you see the scene like 100 times in loop for like or more.
Nowadays, Michaud can be doing all right, just to have something remind him of that day, putting him back in the car with his dead wife.
Like the other day, I saw, like, I think there was some roadwork or something, and I saw like a big white bag on the floor, and my head was a body bag, and I was just like put back into the scene in Archie's.
Many things had to go wrong to lead to Essie's death. But her short and impressive life was similar in a way. Because she grew up in poverty, to a child mother witnessing abuse and inequality, she was dedicated to helping others, and she became great because of that. Now it's her family's turn, to try to find some strength from the tragedy of her death.
My name is Esther Nakajigo, the Uganda's ambassador for women and girls. I am a very happy person. I love life, and I am so grateful to God for all the opportunities He has given me. Esther means star. And also in the Bible, Esther was a queen, a selfless queen who was to die for the other people. And I think I'm trying to wave the flag for that.
Justin Higginbottom, Rocky Mountain Community Radio.
That's it for today's Morning Magazine, the first of 2023. Thanks to John Kellen, Steve Miller, Philip Armour, Alexis Kenyon, Justin Higginbottom, CU students Jason Trazer and Archie Annis, and their environmental studies professor David Siblett for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up just after the news headlines from the BBC.